Turn with me to 2 Peter 3, 3 through 7. 2 Peter 3, 3 through 7. Beginning in verse 3, this is the Apostle Peter writing this. He says, "Know this first of all, that in the last day mockers will come with their mocking, following after their own lust and saying, 'Where is the promise of his coming? For ever since the fathers fell asleep, all continues just as it was from the beginning of the creation. For when they maintain this, it escapes their notice. The word of God, the heavens existed long ago, and the earth was formed out of water and by water, through which the world at the time was destroyed by being flooded with water. But by his word, the present heavens and the earth are being reserved for fire, kept for the day of judgment and the destruction of ungodly men." Peter warned in the Holy Scriptures that in the last days there would be mockers coming. And what do mockers do? They mock. But these are special mockers, because these particular mockers would arise calling into question the core of our faith through their ungodly lust. They will forget two historical occasions from being in the equation. Both of them were of a water basis. First one was the creation account. These particular mockers, for really the first time in history, when they come, they will call into question intelligent design, that there is a creation account. Genesis 1:6, "And God said, 'Let there be an expanse in the midst of the waters, and let it separate the waters from the waters.'" That is what Peter is quoting. The very ground that the mockers would stand on to make their little finger-shaking accusations, they would deny that very ground that they're on. And not only that, the flood account. Not only the creation account, but the flood account, Peter said. Genesis 7, 21 and 22, "All flesh that moved on the earth perished, birds and cattle and beasts and every swarming thing that swarms on the earth and all mankind and all that was in the dry land and all whose nostrils was the breath of life died." You know, in every ancient culture, there is an account of a great flood. All of them. No matter where you go in the world, there is an account that there was a great flood. And now, for the first time in history, we see that denial as well. Both of these will be heavily addressed in the series. Basically put, the context of the passage is that we find a divine warning from God that he brought mankind into this world through water, and he took them out through water as well. And that he is coming back, and he will carry out judgment for those. Now, he's not willing that, he doesn't want anyone to be judged. But he wants all to come to repentance. But he will judge those who, on the basis of what these mockers do, go that wrong way. That is a fact. You cannot mock the Creator and the Judge of the world and get away with it. So in the review of the series, it is with these mockers of the end days, called evolutionists, that we're having this series taught. They deny creation in pursuit of their own lust, trying to answer the meaning of life. They deny the existence of God, and the result is foolishness heavily displayed in their doctrine. In the first lesson on evolution, we covered the dangers of evolution from the perspective of Romans chapter 1. Because there is so much evidence that must be dismissed and suppressed by the evolutionists, this leads to many inherent dangers. Truth is no longer relevant. There's elitist mindset that develops, morals fall, and societies collapse when this is embraced. In the second lesson, we covered the theory of evolution, We examine that the theorist set a course to go against the scientist. A theorist is one who basically stares and then writes an opinion on what they stared at and thought. That's why they call it the evolutionary theory. There's nothing that's been proven. And we ended with the father of evolution, the God-hating theorist Charles Darwin. In this lesson, we will examine the topic of the evolution of evolution. The process of evolution, as described by the theorist, is something that goes through the process of a change. When it comes to evolution and this theory, it's undergone more changes than anything. It truly is an evolutionary theory. A simple review of the last 150 years will prove this fact to you. Let's start out with Darwin. Darwin, the father of evolution, as he is called. As mentioned prior, he wasn't a scientist. He was a wealthy philosopher. I love wisdom. That's what a philosopher is. And he loved it. He wasn't required to work, though. Being a college dropout and living on his father's dime, he took a 5-year unpaid trip as a naturalist aboard the ship called the Beagle. For 5 long years, this religiously delusional young man stared at animals and plants, drew pictures, and then recorded down what his thoughts were about the origin of the universe. And when he got back to England, he wrote Origin of the Species, his observation and thoughts as an alternative to intelligent design. In Darwin's theory, he took Lamarck's theory of acquired characteristics and he evolved it. That's right. Lamarck's theory was evolved by Darwin. Lamarck observed changes in the animal kingdom, and he said with his theory that, well, you know, they're just adapting. These characteristics are adapting to their culture. The giraffe grew a longer neck because he kept stretching and stretching, trying to grab leaves on top of a tree. And the duck, he grew web feet because as a chicken, he couldn't swim well. So he thought, I'll grow web feet. I will adapt. That's what the adaptive of the theory about adapting to the acquired characteristics meant. Well, Darwin took that theory and he says, no. Let me evolve it for you. I will call it pangenesis. And he said that an organ of an animal, here's how it works, he said. Now keep in mind, he had no proof. Okay? But here's what his theory said, that the organs in the animal, because of whatever stresses that they had in their environment, their organs would give off something called gemmules. And little tiny particles that would go into the reproductive organs of that animal, and then when he would propagate the species at this point, what would happen is then it would pass those characteristics on. That's what his theory was. So he evolved one theory into another theory. The problem is there was no evidence of that. Zero. The scientific world, you know, said, this is ridiculous. Where did you get this proof? What are these gemmules? They're made up. Sounded great on paper, but there was no evidence, no scientific research. Well, then Thomas Huxley, he was a man that Darwin called my bulldog. He was a personal convert to Darwinism, and he dogmatically defended the theory across Europe for the remainder of his days. And Huxley started a secret society in London called the X Club with the sole purpose of pushing the evolutionary theory, to push that into the scientific world and suppress all the evidence that went against it. That's what they assembled for. They to suppress the scientific evidence. You can go look it up. It's called the X Club. It was chaired by Huxley himself. And he sought to ridicule the scientific evidence that flew in the face of the evolutionary theory. And that's always been their motive. Psalm 10 verse 4, the wicked in the haughtiness of his countenance did not seek him. All his thoughts are, there is no God. That's what they're trying to prove, that there is no God by giving an alternative to God. We're going to see how well that worked. Only 7 months following the publication of Origin of the Species, Huxley participated in the Oxford debate of 1860. This would be a major tipping point in Europe and how evolution would affect it. Before a crowd of 700, Huxley debated Sam Wilberforce, an Anglican bishop. And through cleverly designed aggressive ridicule, Huxley was able to intimidate the scientists who were present to not want to be part of this anymore, because they didn't want to be ridiculed. They're scientists. They didn't really want so much debate. They wanted to do research, and they saw how Huxley just belittled Wilberforce. He evolved the theory into that which was no longer a theory. He evolved it into a tool to mock science through intimidation. And then Sir Francis Galton, he was the cousin of Charles Darwin. He sought to amplify one of the conclusions of his cousin's theory. He was the one who evolved the theory into eugenics, which was taught that the weak, infirm, and the elderly of society must be put to sleep because they're infecting the purity of the races. And as crazy as this sounded, and as cruel and anti-biblical as this sounded, he had a lot of followers, as you will find out. And then Herbert Spencer. Now, it was his turn to evolve the theory. Along with certain other men, introduced evolutionary teachings to be applied to social fields such as sociology, psychology, education, warfare, economics. He actually came up, used evolutionary terms to explain society's ills and how to fix them. He evolved Galton's teachings and took it one step closer to the practical stage. Oh, and then Friedrich Nietzsche, he took what Spencer taught and evolved it even more. He evolved the theory by writing books saying that the only way to further society was to have wars and to kill off the weaker races, just like you would have in nature. And if you did that, you would end up with the super race. That's what he taught. And then Karl Marx, he took it another step. What Darwin did for biology, Marx did applied to society. When Marx read Origin of the Species, oh, he was in love. I mean, this was the greatest thing he ever read. In fact, he wrote Darwin a letter and asking him to dedicate his own work, Das Kapital, which was his book that he was writing on the ills of capitalism, and that it must be wiped out. And he said, because capitalism, in the survival of the fittest method, took advantage of the labor force. And therefore, he taught by intervening with that, like Darwin, you know, if you could head it off, you could actually control the outcome, wipe out capitalism, and then have communism, community society, to solve the world's problems. And he evolved evolution once again. Darwin even said, you know, I appreciate you want me to dedicate your book and everything, but no, that's not where I was trying to go with this. But that's the part about evolution. You can't stop it once it starts. Sigmund Freud, he was next. He was deeply immersed in evolutionary teachings from his college days in Germany, with the basis being firmly rooted in the concept that we evolved from apes and savages. He came out with what was called psychoanalysis. The newly evolved theory of evolution proposed the primal horde theory, which is the concept that applied to humankind. And what it said was, and primarily, you know, sexual things, urges could be just explained away as being natural and normal. You want to know where all the sexual immorality is being fed? that mindset, because no longer are we coming from a God who designed us with purpose and meaning. We're just advanced primordial slime that gave up climbing in trees and decided we would go ahead and throw on a business suit and go to become sexual promiscuous in our behavior. It's normal. It's natural. That's what he taught. He evolved the theory once again. And then Vladimir Lenin and Joseph Stalin, now was their turn. Lenin was an ardent evolutionist, and he employed his education in Karl Marx to violently overthrow the Russian government. Tens of thousands of people were executed. He evolved evolutionary theory to that of a governmental level. I have the right to kill you and to wipe you out. Survival of the fittest. We're going to become a super nation. And then it was Joseph Stalin's turn. He was in a Christian Orthodox school when he came across Darwin's writings. As a result, he became an atheist. One of his own classmates said, as he read that, he lost all belief in God. Stalin actually had nearly the entire New Testament memorized when that happened. When Lenin died in 1924, Stalin took over, and with his evolved version of evolution, here's what he did. What resulted in a 30-year dictatorship left millions of Russians dead. Karl Marx taught that you had to become, you had to wipe out, like the Christians, you had to wipe out the capitalists, you had to wipe out everybody, and then you would end up with a super race. That's what he taught. By the way, do you know he killed about 40 or 50 million people? Died because of him, the evolutionist? Nice theory in practice. Oh, but he wasn't done. Trofim Lysenko. He arose to power under Stalin in the 1930s. He proposed that you could combine Darwinian evolution with science, animal husbandry, and agriculture through the Marxist theory. You see, what started out with survival of the fittest, all these theories that kept evolving, it went spread through animals, plants, people, governments. Now we're going to try to run it in reverse, go right back to the sciences. He evolved it to a new level, executing thousands and thousands of the best scientists in Russia. He had them killed because they were coming out saying, this isn't going to work. This is not what science is saying. He says, we will kill you. They did. They had a massive brain drain because of it. He particularly focused on geneticists because they taught absolutely contrary to evolution. He claimed that he could evolve winter wheat into becoming spring wheat. That was pretty bad. Do you realize how many hundreds of thousands and millions of people died because of what happened with his great wheat experiment? He couldn't do it. He couldn't control everything. And they ended up starving. Oh, let me tell you about John Dewey. He's another one. Big evolutionist. He was probably one of the most dangerous men in American society in the last century. He's called the father of modern education and was an extreme Darwinist. He's considered the most influential Darwinist of the last century in the United States and sought indoctrination of children in humanism and evolution and collectivism. In 1933, he became a member of the American Humanist Association. He basically used the Humanist Manifesto of 1933 in his plan of indoctrination of our children in America. Traditionally, American education was based in morals and standards, but Dewey declared that in order to be progressive in education, we must, quote, leave the past and evolve upward. Wow, that was really a great idea. He successfully evolved evolution into taking over the education of our own kids in this country. Oh, but let me tell you about another evolutionist. He had a plan too. His name was Adolf Hitler. For years, he studied the writings of Darwin and Nietzsche, taking thoughts into power in 1933, the same year that Dewey joined and implemented the Humanist Manifesto. In those writings, he sought, Hitler did, to evolve evolution to a newer and deadly level than first revealed in his book, Mein Kampf, My Struggle. You know where he got the name for that book? A phrase from Charles Darwin? Yeah. About struggling to overcome and becoming survival of the fittest. Hitler was a radical, radical evolutionist. It was Hitler's intention to destroy the Jews from a society and create a super race. He believed that the human gene pool could be improved by selective breeding methods similar to animal husbandry on farms. His policies brought forth extreme nationalism and racism because we could become the super race and all you others, you need to die. It resulted in 12 million deaths of unfit, inferior, and weak people on battlefields, concentration camps, and ghettos. They didn't tell you about that in school, did they? Let's talk about Benito Mussolini. You want to know why Hitler and Benito got along so well? Like Hitler, he was absolutely fascinated with the writings of Darwin and Nietzsche. He evolved the evolutionary theory to a level that believed that it was through war that survival of the fittest would be carried out. In Northern Africa and Europe, he is responsible for at least another million deaths. Thanks, Darwin. But see, it wasn't done yet. Mao Zedong. Mao? Darwinianism was a critical factor in the communist revolution of China. Mao regarded Darwin, as presented by German Darwinists, as the foundation of the scientific socialism. He required that all people be educated in Darwinism and atheism. He evolved evolution to a level that allowed him to kill millions of capitalists, landlords, religious individuals, and anyone else who would get in the way. From 1949 to 1976, Mao, the Darwinist, guess how many people he killed? Minimum 60 million. 60 million. Wow, this evolution thing is going really great. Let's talk about the evolution of evolution. The largest proof of evolution is the radical changes from within the theory itself. Here are just a few changes and applications of the theory in the last 150 years. Spontaneous generation. No, it's not that. It's inheritance of acquired characteristics. No, it's catastrophism, where catastrophe brings about that. No, it's natural selection, modern synthesis, uniformitarianism, survival of the fittest, hopeful monster. They went back to that twice. Eugenics, Marxism, communism, Nazism, fascism, genetic drift, panspermia. See, panspermia is now they're saying, because I know we can't really answer any of these questions about where nothing produced something. So what it is aliens came and they planted some seeds here on Earth and that's how it grew. That's panspermia. That's the biggie now. You're going to hear a lot about that. Evolutionists of the world show the inconsistency of their theory through reinvention and implementation of Darwinism. It is a bad work, still in the process of evolving, and it's scary to think where it may go next. As long as there are still people out there suppressing the truth, we will always be at risk. But what should you do in light of the evolution assault? I wouldn't just make you feel bad and not give you anything to feel good when you leave. Well, here's what you do in light of it. Number one, draw strength from God. Draw strength from God. In Isaiah 40, verse 28. In Isaiah 40, 28. Do you not know? Have you not heard that the everlasting God, the Lord of the Creator of the ends of the earth, does not become weary or tired? His understanding is inscrutable. He gives strength to the weary, and to him who lacks might, he increases power, though youths may grow weary and tired. And vigorous men, young men, stumble badly. Yet those who wait on the Lord will gain new strength. They will mount up with wings like eagles. They will run and not be wearied, and walk and not be tired. I am here to tell you this morning, draw your strength from God. If you are someone who believes in intelligent design, start tapping into that. As Isaiah said, the creators of the end of the earth does not become weary. Draw on that strength. And you young people, when you're in school, and they try to cram this stuff down your throat, don't give up. Because the God you worship, He's never tired. And His judgment is inscrutable. You will mount up with wings like eagles. When you see it on TV and you're faced with it, you have to make sure you're drawing your strength from God. If you try to go this alone, you will be hurt. Number two, prepare yourself intellectually. 2 Timothy 2 verse 15 tells us to be diligent to present ourselves approved to God as a workman who does not need to be ashamed, handling accurately the word of truth. You need to be putting time in to prepare, to understand these things. Don't just hear it and say, okay, I'm going to trust God. You trust God and you verify it. You learn more about it. Crack the books open. Have involvement in Bible studies. Become educated in this process, because if you don't, you can never go on to step three, and that is to give a good defense for your beliefs. 1 Peter 3, 14 and 15. But even if you should suffer for the sake of righteousness, you are blessed. Do not fear their intimidation and do not be troubled. Sanctify Christ as Lord in your hearts, always being ready to give a good defense to everyone who asks to give an account for the hope that is in you. Are you ready to give a good defense? Are you prepared when you hear this evolutionary doctrine spewed out and thrown in? Can you recognize it? Can you identify it? Can you rebut it? This will be the remaining strategy of all the lessons we will have left on evolution. There will be many more to come. This series is not even half over yet. But what we're going to focus on are these three things. One, how you can draw strength from God as viewing Him as the God of creation. Number two, to prepare yourself intellectually to identify it. And number three, to give a good defense for what you believe. Because I'm here to tell you, you know you have a God that does not get wearied, that is not tired. You tap into Him, we can take this back. We have the science. We have the God. God invented science. And we're going to have a lot of fun in the next lessons to come. Like next week, the lies of evolution. Wow, there's a bunch of them out there. But if you have lost track of where your faith should be in God. Because I'm telling you, if you're not careful, you hear all this Big Bang theory, Little Bang theory, all these different theories out there. You've just been bombarded with it ever since many of you were children. You may have forgotten the abundant, overwhelming, unlimited evidence that God is the Creator. You may have lost track of that. But if you're starting to see it in a better light, and you want to renew your faith in Christ, you need to do so. Don't leave here this morning saying, you know, it'll just get better. It won't get better unless if you will submit it to the brethren for prayer and encouragement and enlightenment. If you've never become a Christian yet, God who created everything, you don't think He can't save you? Are you kidding me? The God who made you with purpose and meaning in your life, that He wants you to go to heaven, you don't think He can get you there? His powers are undeniable. Don't deny him anymore. If you want to become a Christian this morning, why don't you do so now while we stand and sing.